All right, now going then to Matthew 24, the beginning of the discourse, we need to remember what Jesus has just said to the Jews, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the rulers, about, behold, your house is being left to you desolate, and from now on you shall not see me until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Because it's not very many days later that the disciples are still thinking of these words about how their house is going to be left desolate and they won't see him until they say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And to them, the house primarily was represented by the temple. Now, the house Jesus is referring to really is the entire nation of Israel. Your house, the nation of Israel, will be desolated. But they thought of their house very much as the temple. So the whole thing was included, the temple, the whole nation.
And the city of Jerusalem.
And the city, yes. But they were thinking about these words, how dire, how truly terrible a thought this was. And it says at first verse of chapter 24, and Jesus came out from the temple and was going away from the temple when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. Now what is going on there is just that the disciples are thinking what an incredible edifice the temple is. And what Jesus had said was that it was going to be desolate. And they cannot imagine, because at that time it was one of the wonders of the world. It was a temple, a building that had no comparison to anything else that had ever been built. It was magnificent beyond description. Huge stones weighing, some of them 20 tons, and just put together without any mortar, exactly one stone on another. Face of them so square that they fit right square up. It's an incredible edifice. And they were just thinking, how in the world could that be? And they were pointing out these buildings to him as if to say, please look at this. Are you saying this is going to be taken away from us? And he answered them and said to them, do you not see all these things? Truly, I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down. He prophesied what was going to happen in AD 70. And as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, they're still thinking about it. What in the world are you talking about? Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? There are three questions that the disciples ask of him. We want you to tell us when these things will be. And what they mean by these things is what you're saying about the temple, when the stones will not be even left standing one on top of the other. When is that going to happen? And what is this about our house being left desolate? When will these things take place? That's question number one. And then question number two, what will be the sign of your coming? Now they understand that he spoke of a coming again, because he said to them, from now on, I say to you, you will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, you Jews. Not the church now, but the Jews. Until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Because they didn't say that about him at his first coming. They didn't bless him. They didn't receive him. But he said, you will say it when I come again, but you won't see me until you're ready to say that. I'll go away and I won't come. And they said, well, when are you coming then? Tell us the sign of your coming and of the end of the age. They had enough spiritual understanding to know that when he came again, it would be the end of this age. But they tied in, when will these things be? They tied in the destruction of the temple and the desolation of the house with the closing off of the age, because to them, that was such a devastating thing that it could only be a part of the end. Well, we know as we read the rest of prophecy that what happened in 70 AD was truly devastating. It truly was a desolation. The historians wrote at that time that the blood was so high coming down through Jerusalem that it was up to the middle of the horses' legs as they came through the streets. The blood was so tremendously flowing. There was such slaughter. And we know that when Antichrist comes and that great tribulation time begins and takes place over the last 3.5 years of that 7-year period, that it's going to be another time of tremendous devastation. So to them, this whole scene was one thing. We know that it happened twice in 70 AD, and it will happen again at the end of the age. But to them, they tied it all together, and they said, we have 3 questions. When will these things be? When are you coming, and what are the signs, and when will the end of the age be? Jesus had a better understanding of that than they did, of course. And so he knew that he was going to have to answer it somewhat differently from the way they asked it, if he was going to give it to them in truth, and if that truth was going to be written down for others who would read it later. It would need to be said in such a way that it made sense for those in the future, not just for those standing there. Jesus was talking to his disciples when he said this, and remember that they were both Jewish and Christian. And so he speaks to them now about, first of all, the answer to these questions for the Jewish people, because the signs of his coming and of the end of the age are somewhat different for them than they are for Christians. And then he tells what will be the signs of his coming for Christians to watch for. But all of this coming, again, takes place within a 7-year period. So it's rather close. We call it the second coming. And we speak of the second coming all as one thing, but it really has 2 parts to it. Jesus is coming, not all the way to the earth, simply midway, and receiving the church up to meet him in the air, as is explained by Paul in 1 Thessalonians 4. So that is a part of his coming that we'll see him calling the coming of the Lord in this discourse. And then the second part is at the end of the 7 years, when he comes back to greet his brethren, the Jews, who have suffered a tremendous affliction, and only a third of them, a remnant, has been able to make it through physically this horrible time of devastation. And their hearts have been changed, and they are waiting and looking up, and surely they see him, and then they are converted and saved in a day, Isaiah 66 says. They're saved in a day. So the key to understanding this discourse is to realize that he is going to speak first of the signs that the Jews will be looking for. And that extends from verse 4 through verse 31. He's speaking to the Jews about their signs that they will be looking for of his coming, and what these signs should tell them, how it should guide them in the way that they live, what they should do in response to seeing these signs. They're really not for us, they're for the Jews, but we get to look at them, and it kind of helps us to evaluate what's coming up in the future, and things that we see now as foreshadows of these signs, so that we can say, surely the end is near. We see it coming. And then in verse 32, Jesus says something a little different. He says, now learn the parable from the fig tree. And because he mentions a parable, we know that he has shifted gears. Parables were not intended for the Jews. They could not understand them. They were, in fact, a means of condemning them because Jesus said, you hear and you hear, but you don't really hear what I'm saying. And therefore, I'll speak to you in parables so that hearing you may not hear and listening you may not understand. Because it's a condemnation upon you because you've never really listened when you were listening. So the parables, though, are for the church. The church is given the Holy Spirit, and the church is able, through the power of the Holy Spirit, to discern parables. So verses 32 through chapter 25, verse 30, are to the church.
And those scriptures are almost all parables. It's just one parable after another parable as he's speaking to the church. Mm-hmm. When he's speaking to the Jews, up until through verse 31 of chapter 24, there's not one parable. So he goes all those verses, no parables, and all of a sudden it's all parables.
Mm-hmm. And then from verse 30 to the end of chapter 25, he has a word to the nations, to the Gentiles. So all three people groups are addressed here. And if you don't understand the key of three, then you will not be able to understand the Olivet Discourse, because it would seem that he is saying one thing in the first 31 verses that completely contradicts what he is saying in the next 30 or 40 verses. They just don't fit. He speaks of his coming in one way in the first section. He speaks of it in another way in the second section, and they just are not the same. So to try to understand it without understanding who he's speaking to, well, it will not be able to be made sense of. So now we need to realize that in this recording of the Olivet Discourse, Matthew did not record the answer to the first question. When will these things be? Tell us, when will these things be? But Luke may have given the clue, so let's turn over to Luke chapter 21. I say may have because, as I said before, the second desolation at the end of the tribulation period, this, the last half of it, will look so much like the devastation in AD 70 that I'm sure that the listeners had a difficult time knowing exactly what was being said and when it was referring to. But Luke does say this in the 21st chapter, and the Christians took it to heart who were living in the first century as meant for them. Let's look at verse 20. This is Luke's recording and presentation of the Olivet Discourse. And this segment of it right here, starting at verse 20, he says, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is at hand." Jerusalem will be surrounded by armies again in the tribulation period, the armies of Antichrist. But it was surrounded by armies in 66 AD. It says, "Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let those who are in the midst of the city depart, and let not those who are in the country enter the city." We're going to read some words very similar to that in Matthew 24, starting at verse 16. So you'll see that there's something here that could pertain to 70 AD, which might also pertain to the end, the very end. But Luke says this, "Don't stay there. Flee to the mountains. If you're in the midst of the city, get out. If you're in the country, don't come back into the city if you see it surrounded by armies. Because these are days of vengeance, in order that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Woe to those who are with child and to those who nurse babes in those days, for there will be great distress upon the land and wrath to this people, and they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations. and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. We are still in the times of the Gentiles, and we will be in the times of the Gentiles until the Battle of Armageddon. Because the Gentiles will be in control until Jesus returns. Antichrist represents armies of the Gentiles, just the same as Titus did. It's all under Gentile control. Still, it's being trampled underfoot by Arabs today. And it has been trampled underfoot by numerous kingdoms, numerous nations, all through these past 19 centuries. And it will continue to be right up to the end. But Luke does say this about watch out for the surrounding of Jerusalem by the armies. And when you see that, then get out. Well, Josephus records that in 66 A.D., one of the Roman generals, his name was
Sestus Gallus.
Sestus Gallus. He came and he did a siege of the city. And they almost had the people starved out. They had kept them so long under siege that it was beginning to be look like the end. But something, and no one knows what, happened back at Rome, and they had to call the soldiers back. So Sestus Gallus and all of his soldiers left and went back to Rome. And the Christians who had read this from Luke's account said, oh, we've seen it surrounded by armies. It said, get out, let's get out. All the Christians left the city in response to this word of prophecy. And they were not there in 70 A.D. when Titus came and destroyed the city and the Jewish people. The Christians were not there because they obeyed this word. So it could be that Luke meant it for then. It could be that it's also something for way up in the future ahead now, the end of the tribulation period. But somehow Luke captured that part and Matthew did not. Matthew answers the other two questions. Tell us, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? So, now at verse 4 begins the signs, and we'll see what the signs are to the Jews.
Okay, remember, now that we're going to be... You just put your Jewish mindset on. This doesn't have anything to do with the church. It's just like, what's it going to be like for the Jews right before Jesus comes? So for the Jews, for 7 years, there's going to be this tribulation period. And then he's going to come. So all of this, this answer to the Jews, what it's going to be like, is set in the context of the tribulation period. So Jesus is going to answer, and first he's going to say, okay, this is what it's going to be like for the Jews. And then he's going to say, okay, this is what it's going to be like for the Christians. Now, it really gets exciting and practical when we get to the Christian part. But this is also really interesting, and it just helps us to understand all of Scripture. So the first thing Jesus says in verse 4, in this answer, and Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. So that's like something that is very important. No one misleads you. Verse 5, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. So during this tribulation period, there are going to be many who are going to claim their Christ. They're the Messiah, and they will mislead many. Now, the reason that it's important that they don't be misled is because in verse 13, he says, but the one who endures to the end shall be saved. He's talking to the Jews. If you endure to the end of the tribulation period, you will be saved. So don't let anyone mislead you. Now, look in verse 11. He's going to say it again. and many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. And then verse 23 and 24. And then if anyone says to you, behold, here's the Christ, or there he is, don't believe them. For false Christ and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. So, this first thing he says is, be careful, don't be misled. And that's advice number one.
Mm-hmm. Well, just knowing that the Antichrist is coming with all powers of deception would help us to understand that it's going to be a time of tremendous deception. Now, we've seen a lot of deception in this age. We've certainly seen a lot of false Christs, a lot of people who present themselves as saviors or Christs, and people are led astray by them. But that phenomenon is going to multiply drastically during the last 7 years because of the Antichrist and because the Christians will not be on the earth. And so it will be a time when truth will just not be very much present on the earth. And tremendous deception will be taking place. And those who are misled by the Antichrist will come under his power. They'll take the mark of the beast, and there will just be no hope for them. So it's extremely important for the Jews not to be misled and drift off following someone who says that they are Christ. What we see now, I think we could call it just foreshadowings of what will be then, little beginnings of birth pangs. But let's go on and read about birth pangs some more. At verse 6, Jesus says, "And you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs." Well, wars are something that we have had for many, many centuries. And, of course, nation rising against nation, we could probably say the first time that we really saw that, where it was multiplied, was in World War I. And some people think that that was the fulfillment of this prophecy, that nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom, is the beginning of the birth pangs spoken of in verse 8. Mark and I tend to see this as all in the seven-year period because these things are going to be so exaggerated at that time, so much more emphatic, so much more multiplied than they are now, that there's really not going to be much comparison. I'm going to read to you from Revelation 6 to show you that wars and rumors of wars and multiplication of wars will be the first thing that happens in the tribulation. It says there in verse 3 of chapter 6, "And when he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, 'Come.' And another, a red horse, went out. And to him who sat on it, it was granted to take peace from the earth, that men should slay one another. And a great sword was given to him." That red horse represents war. And the Antichrist will make war throughout the earth. He will be determined to become number one on the earth, the only one, the only king, and the only one to be followed on the earth. And he will do that by multiplication of war. And he will just take over little by little until the whole earth is under his control. So we tend to feel that this is a second sign that will take place in the tribulation. Wars, rumors of wars. we feel that it's a little bit too long if you include World War I, World War II, and then all that we're seeing now of wars, for it to really be birth pangs. You know, birth pangs are something that happen. There's a pregnancy of 9 months, and then the birth pangs start. And birth pangs come just a little bit at the first, and then they get harder and harder and harder and harder right toward the end. And then something is born. A child is born. Well, when you think about birth pangs, yes, they're wider and wider, wide apart at the beginning, and then they get shorter and shorter and closer together toward the end. But they don't take the whole pregnancy. I mean, there's a time set there at the end where birth pangs take place. And just in studying this over time, we tend to feel that the birth pangs represent the 7 years, and that there will be wars and more wars, and then there's this multiplication of deceptive elements, and then all these next things that we're going to read about will begin to happen more and more, until what is born at the end of this 7 year period? A new nation is born of Israel. Out of that remnant will come forth this brand new nation that will be reconciled to Christ, his brothers reconciled to him, and they will be lifted up again and set up as the chief nation on the face of the earth. They will be God's people once again, God's earthly people, born again, just like Christians are born. They will be born again. They'll have the Spirit of God in them. They'll know that Jesus is who he is. There will be just a... There will be this brand new rebirth of the nation of Israel, unlike anything that we see today, because although Israel is in the land, it's not back there in a spiritual connection to God. It's just a nation. It's just national, zealously national Israel, but not spiritual. They don't have eyes that see their Savior. They don't understand who their Messiah is yet. Now, it's all right. I think it's not really harmful if a person wants to see this as extending over this century, because in 1900, Israel came back into the land, and so we could say that that's showing us an end-time picture, an end-time indicator there. And these wars that we've had have been large wars, and we have seen nation rising up against nation. But it tends to be more stretched out than I think it probably should be to understand this. And also, when we realize that Jesus was speaking this to the Jews, the fact is that in this century, the Jews are not reading this. They're not looking at it. There are no Jews reading this. Christians are reading it, but no Jews are. But once we are gone from this earth, taken up in the rapture, God is going to anoint 144,000 Jews, one from each of the 12 tribes, 12 times 12, 12,000 times 12. And those will be anointed like a whole army of Pauls to go out and to evangelize the earth. They're going to understand who Jesus is. They're going to be preaching Jesus to the whole Gentile world. And so there's going to come, as soon as the church is raptured out and the tribulation period begins and the anointing of these Jewish servants begin, there's going to come a whole new understanding among a certain group of Jews there of what has taken place with the rapture of the church, who Jesus is, and what is getting ready to happen, that Jesus is getting ready to return, and they are to preach that to the world. Get your life ready. The kingdom is getting ready to come. Jesus is going to return very soon. They're going to go out and they're going to preach that. And they're going to be reading this segment of the Bible. They're going to understand, oh, He's telling me, don't be deceived. Yes, here are all these wars, and it's going to get worse. And it says that there will be famines and earthquakes. Well, we see famines and earthquakes today, but I think they're just a little finger pointing to the more to come. And when we read the book of Revelation, which in chapter 6 through chapter 19 speaks of that seven-year period, we see more earthquakes, more famines, more wars, tremendous multiplication of those things in the tribulation period. So when the Jews start reading this, this is what they'll be seeing happen. And they'll be saying, oh, you know, this is what he said. This is what we're looking at. So if this is for them, then it would have to pertain to that time period, we think. However, it doesn't do great despite to it to read that some of the things that are happening now could be included in here. It doesn't tear it up too much to think that way about it. But anyway, he says these are the signs. There will be deceivers. Don't follow them. There will be a lot of wars. But when you see all these wars, don't get frightened. You've still got a little time. The end is not right yet. It's coming soon, but it's not right yet. And then you'll see some earthquakes. You'll see some famines. But these are just the beginning of birth pangs. Things are going to get tougher. It's going to get closer and closer together. It's going to get worse before the end comes. And I'm trying to describe this picture to you so you'll hold on till the end. Because those who hold on to the end are going to see me coming in the clouds. And those are the ones who are going to believe and be blessed to be part of this great nation. So that's why we see it more as in a seven-year package here.
Okay, I'm just going to read those same verses again. Verse 6 says, and you'll be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not frightened, for those things must take place, but that's not yet the end. That's just some birth pangs, and that's in the first half of that seven-year period. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Various places there will be famines and earthquakes. Those are just birth pangs, and that happens in that first 3.5 years. He says, but these things are merely the beginning of the birth pangs. And then they will deliver you up to tribulation. So everything is going fine for the Jews. Everything is really pretty good because the Antichrist has made this covenant of peace with them. And things are going pretty good for them. But all of a sudden, Satan indwells the Antichrist, and the Antichrist becomes the beast. And then they will deliver you up to tribulation. This is the middle of the tribulation period, and this is when it really gets bad for them. And they will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations on account of my name. And at that time, many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Jews, this is what's going to be for you. It's just imagine how bad this is going to be. And many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. So this is in that last half of the tribulation period. And lawlessness is increased. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. This is in the last half of the tribulation period. It's getting terrible. But the one who endures to the end, it is he who shall be saved. This is the last half of the tribulation period. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a witness to all nations, and then the end shall come. So this is not like the gospel of grace. It is this gospel of the kingdom. Gospel is good news. The kingdom has to do with this coming kingdom where Jesus' kingdom is going to be on the earth and he's going to rule the earth. This gospel of the kingdom, it's going to be preached in the whole world to all the nations by those 144,000 Jews, and there's going to be multiple believers who... And you know they're going to be preaching that Jesus is coming. He's coming soon, and of course all salvation is by grace. So it's not that they don't preach a salvation by grace, but the focus is on the kingdom. Is he's coming soon. The king is coming soon, and he's going to set up his kingdom. So that's this gospel of the kingdom that's going to be preached to the whole world. And the way that that verse is usually thought of is that we have to get out and we have to win people, because a certain number of people have to be won, and then the rapture happens. That's the way it's usually thought of. But when you read it like this, it doesn't make good sense to see it that way. The context is, in this tribulation period, the gospel that has to do with the coming kingdom, and that's what Jesus is talking about when he comes again, the end of the age, and when he comes again to set up his kingdom. So this gospel of the kingdom is going to be preached to all the nations, and then the end shall come.
So when you hear people today saying, Jesus can't come right now because the gospel hasn't been preached to all the nations yet, that's incorrect, because Jesus can come anytime now. Everything is in place for him to come back. There is no prophecy that needs to be fulfilled for him to come. He can come at any moment. Everything is in place. But to say that the gospel hasn't been preached to the whole world is incorrect, because, and that we have to wait for that, because it's not saying the gospel of grace, which we are now preaching, has to be preached to the whole world. It doesn't. But in, as a matter of fact, the gospel of the kingdom will reach the entire world during the 7-year period. And that will happen before the end comes, before Jesus returns. Those 144,000 Jews will take it all over the world. And then the end will come. Does that make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. See what we're saying?
Now, from verses 9 through 14, that's a description of the entire, from the last half of the tribulation period. Then they will deliver you to tribulation. That's when the Antichrist stands in the temple and declares himself as God. That's when the great tribulation, it's called, begins. And for 3.5 years, then these things happen, and many will fall away, all that. And then in verse 13 it says, but the one who endures to the end, it is he who shall be saved. Now, Scripture says that God is going to prepare a place for some of the Jews. Actually, 2/3 of the Jews are killed during the tribulation period. And 1/3 of the Jews make it through the tribulation period. And we can read about that 1/3 if we turn to Revelation 12:6. It's going to talk about the woman, and if we'd have to look back up and read from verse 1, and I'm not going to take the time to do that. The woman is Israel. In verse 5 it says, and she, so in verse 5 it says she, that's Israel, gave birth to a son, that's Jesus, a male child who is to rule the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. He was ascended. So we see that she is Israel. Now this she, the woman, in verse 6, fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God so that there might be there she might be nourished for 1,260 days, which is 3.5 years. So she's going to be there for the last half of the tribulation. She's going to be nourished, a place prepared for her. And that, we know that one third of the Jewish people make it through from prophecies and books like Zechariah.
Mm-hmm. That's in chapter 13, Mark, at verse 8, if you want. Want me to read that?
Yeah, just go ahead and read it.
Zechariah 13:8 says, "It will come about in all the land, declares the Lord, that two parts in it will be cut off and perish, but the third will be left in it, and I will bring the third part through the fire, refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. And they will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God."
Okay, and then verse 14 of Revelation 12 says this about these people who are going to be protected. "And the two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman," the woman is Israel, "in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she was to be nourished for a time, times, and a half a time from the presence of the serpent." So a time is 1 year, times is 2 years, and one half time is half a year. So that's the 3.5 years. And that's equal to that number of days, 1,260 days that we read. And verse 15 says, "And the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and drank up the river which the dragon poured out of its mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring who kept the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus." So the rest of her offspring then would be believers that, you know, have believed through this, the testimony of the 144,000 Jewish evangelists.